Guantanamo.
Vice President Biden, why couldn't you close Guantanamo Bay? Why couldn't the Obama administration close Guantanamo Bay?
We attempted to close Guantanamo Bay, but you have to have congressional authority to do it. They've kept it open. And the fact is that we, in fact, think it's the greatest. It is an advertisement for creating terror.
It is an advertisement for creating terror. The image of Guantanamo around the world, the fact of it. Mark Mayer, your final words.
The only two things that I would add were to kind of hone in on something that Gary was saying there. He mentioned having petitioned for writ of habeas corpus back in 2010. That would have been during Barack Obama's presidency, and that means his Justice Department was opposing that petition for a writ of habeas corpus. We found ourselves in a similar situation with our client, Assadollah Haroon Gul. His Justice Department, President Biden's Justice Department, took the same position that President Bush's, President Obama's, President Trump's did.
We have 10 seconds. What should Biden do?
He should stop opposing these petitions for writ of habeas corpus and begin releasing all of the uncharged men who remain in Guantanamo Bay.
We want to thank Mark Mayer and Gary Thompson, lawyers for at least two of the Guantanamo prisoners. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Stay safe.
I'm David Brower, David R. Brower, and I add the R because...
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM. The time is 8 a.m. It's time for Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy.
Good morning. Welcome to Too Much Information. My name's Abe Proctor. Joining me this morning, my illustrious co-host, Tracy Simmons. We're here to talk to you about the events of the day. What's going on, Tracy? How are you?
Oh, I'm doing good. I had a restful weekend and a not terrible Monday. Got to hang out with the grandbaby and the fam at the beach and feeling not so surly, but you know, there's always something to stir up the pot, right?
Well, I hope so, because we want you at your surly best every Tuesday morning. I might have something that will get you right back into form, but before I do that, I should mention the number to call today, 503-231-8187. We welcome your input on today's conversation. You can also write to us at the Facebook page, facebook.com/TMI. So here's my question for you, Tracy. Are you feeling safer? If so, it might be because the Portland Police Union has moved to Milwaukee.
I don't know if I feel any safer. I feel a little worried, actually. And, you know, there's like lots of data out there that show when the police don't live in the neighborhood that they police, they are harsher. They are less likely to see the people they are policing as part of their own community. They are less likely to humanize people who are, you know, committing crime, you know, and that makes everybody less safe. And I'm like, okay, so what's the angle here? Is rent too high in Portland for the police association to be able to rent another unit, purchase a building? I don't know. Are y'all saving on gas? You know, the gas prices are up. Saving on commute time. Like, what is this? And for those of us who live in North Portland, around where the old police association building was, you would remember last year all of the times that, you know, they tear gassed the neighborhood because of protests, and how disgusting and terrible that was for the families and people in that neighborhood, specifically children and young people who had nothing to do with the actual protests. But I'm sure the people of Milwaukee don't feel that safe, because not like people aren't going to show up to that building. The people who protest in Portland are pretty, pretty dedicated to their cause. And so it really doesn't matter where you move to, they'll find you. This is an interesting development. And I think we should all be asking questions about it, and not questions in the tough person. I just want to know, but questions that are, they're real questions, right? Like, why is this, what is this change? And what are the motives behind it?
But you don't want to ask Tucker Carlson the now question. did the Portland Police Union move to Milwaukee because snake creatures told them? I'm just asking the question.
Exactly. I ask you real questions. But it is an interesting move for sure. And, we've had, a whole plus a year to really critique the police and ask questions. And what we're finding, recently is that the reality of the Portland Police Bureau is that the more money we give them, it doesn't help to clear more crimes. It hasn't helped us become a safer community as a group of people. It hasn't really improved anything. And yet they continually ask for more and more resources. So, we were seeing a spike in gun violence in Oregon. Of course, to me, it's directly connected to the pandemic and the fact that some people who have been out of work for a long time have had a harder time to move their hustle. Mm-hmm. So just think about, drug dealers, people who traffic in all kinds of dibbling and dabbling, who we're not able to sell that product because people weren't going out to clubs. People weren't having a nightlife. People were staying home towards the beginning of the pandemic. And I'm just guessing that some of those folks, they have to find a new craft or fight each other for scarcity situation of needing to move product and all of that. So who knows? Could be related, could not be related, but we've seen a spate of gun violence and property crimes and all of that, and so now the police bureau has moved to Milwaukee. They're farther away than I think they should be. People on my next door are complaining all the time about response times for calls. But we have not defunded the police. I just want to be real clear about that. We still have not defunded the police. Nothing has changed. We actually gave them more money to assault and gas our citizens all last year. But people are just not wanting to do that job. So there have been a ton of retirements. There have been a ton of people who have decided they didn't want to do that anymore, and other people who have not stepped up to take those jobs. So the force is, smaller. But not any significant sure. way smaller. And I just wonder what these moves are all about. And I worry for our communities that the farther away the police are, the less connected they are to the communities that they're serving in.
Yeah, it's true. You mentioned that, maybe the police should move to save on gas or on commute time. And that underscores the fact that a lot of people in the police bureau and other public servants, teachers, for example, don't earn enough money to live in the neighborhoods where they either go on patrol or where they teach school. And that poses a fundamental problem, as you were alluding to. Connection to one's community, I think, is largely predicated on one's presence in the community. And if you're only someplace, while you work, obviously that is being present in the community, but it's not quite the same as when you walk out your front door and you see neighbors all around and you see these people as part of your community. It's not quite the same. So I'm not making an argument here to increase police funding so that we can pay officers enough to live in Portland. But at the same time, I'm saying, maybe we ought to pay teachers, everybody else, enough to live in the neighborhoods that they serve. Doesn't seem to be too outrageous a request.
No, I would say the Portland police get paid plenty. I think they have just become not seen as actual people who are conferring public safety, and in some ways have been demonized, and at the same time they're not clearing crimes. They haven't ever cleared crimes. I've seen, you know, the comments about, you know, people calling 911 and being put on hold for 7-8 minutes. I've heard of a person on Nextdoor. Okay, this is not news. This is just not confirmed. But a person on Nextdoor that said that someone was literally breaking into their house. They called the police, the 911 number, and literally sat there while the person was like banging on their door and trying to get in. And you know, no one ever came. But the person obviously didn't get in. But the person gave up on trying to call 911, and the person gave up trying to break in. So, I mean, win-win, maybe. I don't know, but it doesn't seem good. And what happens, though, too, is that, you know, the general public will see response times low, not clearing crime, not have a good understanding of what community safety looks like, and be like, no, it makes sense. We've got to give them more money. No, no, and no. I'm sorry. I'm having this hard time. But the executive dude, Daryl Turner, who for a while he got canned, and then a new person came in, and that person got canned because they had misidentified city commissioner Joanne Hardesty in a hit-and-run crime, which she doesn't even own a car, so that guy got canned, and now Daryl Turner is back as the head of the Portland Police Bureau, Portland Police Association, and he's the one that is assisting in this move. So I'm wondering, like, where does he live? I don't know.
We should mention that Nextdoor is a website that is that serves various neighborhoods in various cities. You sign up, you register, you indicate what neighborhood you live in, and it's a way for neighbors to share information. And you're right, a lot of the information is, you know, some dude walked through my yard last night, or, you know, there's a skunk, watch. But, yeah, occasionally, yeah, you can really glean some interesting community insights from Nextdoor. It's a fascinating place to hang out.
So this last weekend, Portland, it was really focusing on rekindling Portland. There were some events in the city, a huge event in Pioneer Square. And at the same time, there was an organization that was going around putting up signs related to the Portland Police Bureau. And they are not funny, but funny. One of them says, Portland Police Bureau ordered pizza and ate it in front of the man they murdered. Terrible.
Yeah.
Like, just terrible. PPB couldn't stop a mass shooting that happened 6 blocks away from over 120 officers and personnel. Interesting. PPB photoshops mugshots to make false arrests. PPB shoots and kills people having mental health crises. And PPB cares about windows, not your life. Yikes! So I'm just wondering, you know, if anyone saw those wheat pasting pics or flyers, I guess. To know, I wonder how that was hitting for the people who were down and out and about in downtown, trying to enjoy their time in huge gatherings, breathing on each other. Oh, we're not talking about COVID. Sorry, but I would feel unsettled. And you know, I am a Portlander through and through. I go downtown. I'm not at all bothered by houseless people. But I am bothered by the idea that we would continue to perpetuate the status quo by not making it a priority as a place and space to re-envision community safety.
Yeah, it would seem that, you know, if there was a place and a time to, you know, reinvestigate how we as a community respond to emergencies in real time, I guess, which is a more convoluted way of saying defund the police, it would seem to be here and now in Portland, Oregon, where there is a demonstrable track record of police misbehavior in the very recent past and a demonstrable level of public will to try something new. Yet it seems that each of these attempts, it never seems to gain the traction that it needs. It's frustrating, I got to admit.
Yeah. Yeah, and EJI, an organization that does a lot of research on incarceration rates, disaggregated data on incarceration, has done some pretty extensive research to find that, you know, incarceration has marginal to zero impact on crime. We know that. We've seen that. It's part of our reality that we have a lot of people who are incarcerated for, you know, very unserious crimes for a long time. And it doesn't stop the crimes from happening out on the streets. But also the kind of policing that we are paying for also does not have any real effect on crime. We know that the most safe communities are the communities that are heavily resourced, that the education systems are well-funded, that neighborhoods and housing is well-funded and people feel secure, that people's mental health, physical health, all health, you know, emotional health is all being tended to, and they are resourced for the purpose of really taking care of people. We just have it all wrong. The punitive system has not worked, and yet here we are, right, still doing these same things over and over again, which is just the definition of crazy, because we're not changing anything. In 2000, this is going back, but the United States spent roughly $33 billion on incarceration, and, you know, really didn't do much, but for the same level of public safety it achieved in 1975, it spent only $7.4 billion. So we've continued to pour money into the system to have little to zero effect on actual safety. It's bizarre. We just keep doing it. And we keep, and the you know, that funding model just keeps going up from $33 billion in 2000 to over $48 billion, right, in 2020. So we just have to figure it out because it's not working.
It's true. And the war on drugs has given us a supply chain in which military equipment, once it's phased out of military use, is passed on into the hands of law enforcement. So as we've seen this increased level of investment in, you know, what's a good way to put it, in brutal first response, let's just put it that way, sending in the guys with the guns and badges to every possible situation, we've had police forces that are increasingly militarized, who are equipped and trained more and more like soldiers, and who recruit their members from people who have served in the parade of forever wars in which the United States has been engaged for the last 20 years. So you really have sort of a vicious and contracting circle here. And it's time to do something different. We've talked about it many times on the show in the past, and again here today. The police bureau, the only way, I'll use the Portland Police Bureau just by way of example, the only framework in which it could be analyzed to be functioning as intended is the framework that describes the function of the police as protecting one segment of the citizenry from another. And for those of you who don't want to read between the lines, law enforcement that is designed to protect white people from black people, from mostly the perceived threat of black people. Under that rubric, American policing is working just fine. But by virtually any other measure, it's a train wreck. And it's time for something new. And it seems to me like this city, our city, could be the place to give it a go. So this is a subject we're going to return to, I have a feeling, Tracy, again and again.
I mean, I hope so. And I hope we collectively, as a city, stop kind of falling back into those old patterns, right, where we get scared. This is a long history in Portland when you think about specifically north, northeast, inner city Portland, that there have been these waves of, mass flight out of the city to the suburbs because, of course, you know, in the 1970s, there were a lot of people coming up from California, immigrants, black people, people from other places, but people who were non-white coming into the city, living in the neighborhoods that were most cost-effective for them to live, and, you know, large swaths of the white community moving and going to the suburbs, Gresham, you know, Hillsboro, Beaverton, Tiger, just moving out of the city center and then coming back and then moving out again, right? When the crack hit the streets in the, you know, late 80s, 90s, early 90s, mid 90s, everybody just moved out, right? And the property values went down. Of course, then we've got the regentrification in the 2000s continuing to now. But yeah, that just even that commentary that Portland is a dying city, all of this thing. If that was true, why is the average home price like, you know, 600 something thousand? That's not true. We need to figure out how to invest in actual community safety to save ourselves, because right now nobody else is coming. They might not even answer the phone call, really. So how do we start demanding that we spend money on the things that really confer community safety and break out of these old patterns of behavior and thinking that have not served us or our community?
That was very well said. Nice job. We ought to just end the show right there.
Well, no, we want to hear from callers. What do y'all think about the police association? Mind you, this is the union moving to Milwaukee.
All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. This is Too Much Information with Abe Proctor and Tracy Simmons. We are going to be talking about the Portland police and the state of policing in the United States in general today. We also want to add into the mix the fact that the January 6th commission is holding its first set of hearings today. Now, this is something I was listening to briefly prior to this broadcast, and what I heard was the testimony of D.C. Metro police officers recounting their experiences on the day in question, on January 6th. And it was harrowing. I really encourage everybody to, I'm here. Let me recommend to everyone this really disturbing thing that you should go do. Yes. I really recommend that you, you know, you find a way to tune into those hearings, or you find video or audio recordings of the testimony of those officers on that morning. I think it's important, now that several months have passed since that event, that we all be reminded of exactly what transpired that day and what the objective of those terrorists was on that day. And I use the word terrorist deliberately, because that's the same word that the police officers that I listened to this morning used. They said, they made statements like, then I and my colleagues were cornered by a group of terrorists. The group of terrorists began chanting racial epithets at me. Officers talking about being crushed under the press, the ebb and flow of bodies, and how that got exponentially worse when the terrorists started synchronizing, heaving and hoeing the movement of their body and the shifting of their weight. You know, talking about officers gathering so that they could be decontaminated, have, you know, tear gas removed from their eyes, pepper spray removed from their eyes, and how the other officers were trying to protect those officers because of the unique vulnerability that being in mid-decontamination poses. So, yes, people, please watch, listen, remember, because this is on the brink of going down the memory hole. So far, everybody who's been arrested, arrested or put on trial because of this has been one of the rank and file, one of the people who was actually involved in storming the building that day. And that's entirely appropriate. Yes, if you're involved in a criminal and violent insurgency and a coup attempt against the lawfully elected government of the United States, yeah, I think you ought to come to the notice of the criminal justice system. But what's more, the danger of this, the threat of this, is not going to go away until those who are complicit in the rest itself are held to account. I'm talking about many of the same people who lobbied to be on the commission that is interviewing witnesses today. I go over and over this in my mind. I try to imagine a situation, perhaps in another country, where something similar happened, and then 6 months go by, and none of the power owned, and maybe even abetted this attack, have been held to account in any way possible. From the outside looking in, this has got to look like the most dysfunctional group of idiots you've ever seen. And then I go over again in my head and I ask myself, had this been, if we had flipped the political polarity here in this country, and if we were talking about a group of leftists, armed leftists who stormed the Capitol and tried to execute a coup, there would literally be blood in the streets from the guillotines that the Republicans set up on the steps of the Capitol to execute everybody involved. Yeah, that's hyperbole. Yes. Yes, it is. But I think you understand where I'm going with this. We have to remember about this. We have to respond about this. It's of the utmost importance. And I hope that the right sorts of people are listening to those broadcasts or watching those broadcasts today.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's so interesting about just the human brain and how we, you know, work as humans, we are so quick to just forget about terrible things. It's just so much easier. It's a protective factor of the human brain that really pushes out trauma, especially over time, right? This is why we tell people when they're in mourning, you know, it takes time. Time heals all things, whatever we say, right? Because the brain actually works in that way, that the further you are from a traumatic event, the less likely it's going to have a daily impact on you. Right, even with PTSD, right, there's still trauma there. It's still impacting, but it is not magnified so much over time, right? Especially if you can get over that. And in this case, right, to hear these voices and to hear these people who were there at the moment, and you know, I've worked for a long time. I always think of things like in the sense of like, okay, I'm at work, and you know, people are coming to get me. You know, like, how would that feel? What would I do? What would my response be? And in this case, the place that they work is kind of seen as venerated as part of the fabric of our country, right? I'm not going to go into all of that, right? But, you know, it was definitely built with the hands of ancestors who look like me. But to think that you could be going about your day as an employee at work and be subject to such a terrible event. I could imagine that those folks are walking around with substantial trauma, but yet the rest of us who watched it on TV were pretty traumatized, like in the weeks after, but now it's months. It's like, you know, it happened. And I think what we're seeing is, you know, the people who were involved, Republicans who kind of cheered it on, chanted it on, supported, you know, like, yes, get them. Those folks, for their own political power and maintaining that power, have downplayed this in such a way that I just don't think that as a nation we're able to allow that to continue, right? And it's oftentimes the people who had the most to say about it, you know, the Paul Gosars, who was, you know, in cahoots with the Ali Alexander, who was kind of the person leading it all, pulling it all together. There are a lot of interesting characters that were involved, and none of those people have been held to account at all. And to Abe's point, it's like, as a society, we punish the people that it's easiest to punish, right? The people who, you know, may have broken a window or may have jumped through or, you know, had their flag and beat somebody with it. Yikes. But the people who actually are responsible will likely never, outside of this, be held to account. And it just doesn't work as a society to have a system of justice that is not justice. Right, it only affects certain people with certain statuses in life, certain incomes. Right, we know that the justice system doesn't work for Black and Brown people, nor does it work for poor people. And yet, you know, here we are with this terrible event, people walking around with a ton of trauma, who really haven't been able to share their stories. And so, I agree, it's hard to hear, but I think for those of us who are able to like block it out of our minds and just keep going, you know, we need to remember this is scary stuff. And if it would have been successful and we would have had, you know, senators and Congress people killed because of this, you know, frenzy of a mob, the story would be different, but it shouldn't be very different.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to go after as far up the flagpole as this runs. And that includes, I'm looking at you, Josh Hawley, look at you, Ted Cruz. I'm looking at all of you who stood up that very day and supported the mob that tried to kill you. So, you know, this, I'm hoping that these hearings will rekindle that spirit amongst the people in a position
to go after these folks. Now, I have to say, in fairness, that this might be going on. The Justice Department may be on this case already. We don't know, because typically they don't talk about things like that. But I try to flip the polarity in my mind, and it's inescapable how this would have gone if this went in the other direction, right? If these had been left, if these had been, a mixture of, and pick your left-wing boogeyman of the day, Antifa, Black Lives Matter, if it had been a group of leftists out there, we would be at an absolute national convulsion, getting to the bottom of this at every possible level in every possible part of the country where any of these people came from. But we're not doing that right now. These people are still free. They are still representing their constituents in Congress. They are still, filibustering laws that ought to be passed. They're still doing all these things.
They're still collecting donations.
They're still collecting donations. Yeah. This reminds me of an old 17th century English protest song called The Goose in the Common. I'm just going to read a verse right now because it's really apt. The law locks up the man or woman who steals the goose from off the common, but leaves the greater villain loose who steals the common from off the goose. So, yeah, this is not new historically. When a great crime is perpetrated, it's the little people who are punished, the little people who are prosecuted. And their aiders and abettors of wealth and influence are left unscathed. And I really, really hope that we are smarter than that as a polity and as a nation. Yeah, you can tell I'm feeling some kind of way about this today, Tracy.
Mm-hmm. I think we all need to. I feel like, it's a precursor to something more terrible, right? Because we've got a 2022 election cycle. We've got 2024, where right now Trump is far out ahead of others. Although I think, that is within his party. And that party is not representative of a lot of Americans. And so I don't think that he would ever be successfully reelected without all of the shenanigans of voter suppression and gerrymandering and voter intimidation and closing, all of the things that they're trying to do, right? I don't think that he could ever be reelected. And these people are literally so attached in this cult-like behavior to this person that I just feel like it's not going to go good if he does, successfully, get out from under this legal quagmire, which he's in, that we haven't really heard that much about. It's been pretty quiet on that front. But if he can get out of that and actually run in this next election and lose, those people have hitched themselves to a falling star, and I feel like they would be willing to go down with the ship. And that is really frightening, because that kind of desperation, the kind of fear that he stokes, the level of scarcity that we are living in as a country, creates that level of desperation that you feel like this only person is going to save you. And when that person is no longer able to do so because they haven't won, right, that level of desperation just amplifies, and who knows what people would be willing to do.
I mentioned that I heard a bit of the testimony this morning from D.C. Metro Police and Capitol Police officers, and there a number of reporters right now are transcribing the hearings as they roll out, summarizing them, I guess would be a better word. So I'm going to read a little bit of that right now. This is from Officer Harry Dunn of the Capitol Police. Dunn recounted an exchange he had with insurrectionists and MAGA hats who, he said, were yelling that, quote, President Trump invited us here, end quote. One rioter, Dunn said, yelled that nobody voted for Joe Biden. Dunn recalled that he replied to the rioter, well, I voted for Joe Biden. Does my vote not? Dunn said that led to a torrent of racial epithets. One woman in a pink MAGA shirt yelled, you hear that, guys? This N-word voted for Joe Biden, Dunn told the committee. Then the crowd, perhaps 20 people, joined in screaming, boo, effing N-word. Recall, Tracy, and recall, listeners,
the aftermath of September 11th attacks in 2001. And I'm not bringing this up for, you know, to glorify the disaster or to, you know, to get off on it in any way. But I want to compare the reactions, the collective reactions among the conservative right in this country after September 11th and after January 6th. September 11th was grist for the mill, literally for years, for decades, to justify an outburst of American imperialism around the world that echoed that heyday of the late 1800s. The series of forever wars in which we are still embroiled spring, all of them, from the attacks of September 11th. Right, how many times have we seen things, very, very public venues, like Super Bowl halftime shows, venerating the warriors, especially the fallen warriors, remembering the horror of the September 11th attacks, wringing every last drop of patriotic fervor from that that could possibly be gleaned, and use it to justify some of the most horrific acts of foreign policy and of violence against people around the world that the United States has ever perpetrated. Now, compare that to what's coming from the right about January 6th. Oh, they were tourists. That place looks just like it would, you know, if a tour came through. Oh, these people are just patriots. And now we've got a movement by people like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz and others to free the January 6th prisoners, as if they're like oppressed political heroes or something. This was an attempt to execute a coup against the United States government. And they would just as soon you forget about it and never thought about it again. Let's talk about critical race theory instead. Let's talk about mask mandates instead.
Anything.
Anything instead, except this horrific thing that happened. It's like it was yesterday. I can't get my head around it, Tracy.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I feel like we're just in. The division is so ingrained, and we know why, right? It's for political power. That, I mean, we'll talk about this with kind of new data that's coming out about COVID-19 and the unvaccinated. But there's this like. I will not even face reality if the reality sounds like something that you might like, right?
Right.
For us, it's like nobody likes this, right? Nobody thinks this was a good thing. But the level of denialism and downplaying this very significant event, I think it will be studied for a long time by historians, because if we can't see something like that the same way through the same lens of like, this is not okay, right? Whether you think it's, you know, justified or not, that Trump won or that the election was rigged or whatever, right? I mean, I just think about the 2000 election that a lot of Democrats thought was absolutely rigged. And the you know, Supreme Court got involved and gave the election to George Bush, George W. Bush. And a lot of people were like, that was not fair, right? But we didn't, as a progressive group of people, go and storm the Capitol. This is a significant event that, seen through these completely different lenses, makes absolutely no sense. But you have to imagine that the people who are seeing it in that downplayed way are being told by their leaders that that is the truth, and they're so accepting of that truth that they won't even be able to see it for themselves. And so I think what's interesting, and some of the people who have testified were so... struck by the fact that they were seeing all these thin blue line flags, right? And that flag has been, you know, kind of propped up as a support for police, although I don't think that's what it is. I think it's about kind of what you were referring to earlier, Abe, and who the police serve, right? Property
yeah.
owners,
yeah.
Historically richer people, historically whiter people, right?
yeah, the thin blue line protects the one from the other. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But these were police officers seeing these thin blue line and flags, and they were, you know, officers of color who were at the same time being berated, stormed, and called the N-word, right? Like,
yeah.
How are these two things possible at one time? I feel like for them, even trying to reconcile that even today in their mind is interesting. And, you know, I have all of my own feelings about the flag anymore, that, you know, I was at the beach this week and I did see a person with a thin blue line hat on. And there are tons of really big flags. And our house has a flagpole with an American flag. And I, you know, talk about, no, we need to erect a Black Lives Matter flag up there and worry how that would be received. But the flag even has a new meaning for me, right? When I see a big truck with big flags, thin blue line or otherwise, I already start thinking, like, this might be a person that I should be afraid of. And so, like, all of this is just so interesting how we could all see the same event but interpret it completely different.
Right. Or we can see a ubiquitous symbol, a symbol that should belong to each and every one of us, and we can draw conclusions about the person displaying it. And it's, I'm sorry to say, probably those conclusions are going to be accurate. I don't know. But you're right. The thing about representative democracy is, it doesn't work unless we all buy in, right? It doesn't work unless we all respect the rules that we have laid down. You know, if things don't go your way, that's the way it goes. You know, you got to gather yourself and figure out how to win the next time around. Like my daughter, when she's at preschool, when she disagrees with the way a game has turned out and throws a tantrum, she's got to go to timeout. So I'm suggesting that maybe Ted Cruz needs to go to timeout. Maybe he needs to go there with Josh Hawley. And maybe we should just, you know, put them in the same room together and, you know, whichever one of you... Okay, I'm getting kind of dark, so I'm not going to go there any further. Let's go to the phones. Caller, time to rescue us. Good morning. Kawazi, what's on your mind?
Hey there, folks. This is Kawazi. I just wanted to talk a little bit about a former officer, Greg Lewis. People who have been in Portland for a while will remember that this one officer talked openly about murdering unhoused people, especially Black unhoused people. And he was eventually given retirement. Basically, city council realized there was no way they're going to be able to fire him, and the only way to get rid of him was going to be to give him retirement. So he took full retirement after advising his fellow officers to murder people. So, you know, this was done laughingly after a killing of an unarmed person by Portland police that they claim was on mistake. So anyway, you know, officers like Greg Lewis are horrible, horrible officers. And they're emblematic of Portland police overall. Thanks for your time.
Thank you for the call.
So I don't know if y'all remember C.W. Jensen, but C.W. Jensen, you know, was a former Portland police captain. You know, not this has nothing to do with Greg Lewis, but that is a thing, and you can look it up on Oregon Live.
Yep.
He was literally encouraging the killing of unhoused people, and specifically, you know, talking about race as part of that. Disgusting, right? And of course, he has a strong union. That union was like, no, he cannot be dismissed without his pension. And guess what? That dude is collecting lots of money and not serving anybody, but has actually created a lot of harm. So I wonder how many people were trained under him. C.W. Jensen is another, he was venerated as a Portland police captain, retired, was on TV, had a couple shows. You know, those great, like, police outtake shows. They're never great. It's pretty terrible to watch. But, you know, he spews racist vitriol all the time on Twitter, and he's still on there. But he is on a regular basis saying terrible things. And so you just can see that that is, I wouldn't say that's, you know, the element there, but that is an element of Portland police, that there is a long history of people who have signed up to be the police so that they could inflict some kind of harm on the people that they don't like. And that draws around class lines, race lines, housed and unhoused lines, right? It's clear that there is an element of Portland policing that is othering, that is harmful to Black and brown people, poor people, et cetera. I think what's interesting also about Milwaukee, and I know Milwaukee has changed over time, but I moved to Portland in the very late 90s, and I just remember getting these flyers. I lived in Southeast Portland, and it was flyers about Volk's Front, which is kind of probably a precursor to the Proud Boys. But, you know, Milwaukee has been known, Milwaukee, Oregon City, parts of Clackamas County have been known as kind of holdout places for the old guard kind of neo-Nazi energy of the Portland metro area, so it's also not lost on me that you chose Milwaukee. I know Milwaukee. Thank you to all the Milwaukee listeners we have, that it has changed. I do remember at the end of summer taking my family to the Mike's Drive-In. Yay, Mike's Drive-In and Banana Fresh Milkshakes. to have some, you know, some fish and chips with the family last summer. And we're all Black, just a reminder. Seeing a Black Lives Matter parade, car parade, going through the main street down there in Milwaukee. And I, you know, I had tears in my eyes. I know that the neighborhood has changed, but there is that old element that I think has a history of in the region that it's not lost on me either.
No, definitely not. All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You're listening to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. My name is Abe Proctor. Tracy Simmons is joining me, as she does each and every week. This morning we're talking about policing in Portland, the relocation of the Portland Police Association, which is the police union, to Milwaukee, Oregon. We're also talking about the convening of the January 6th Commission and its first day of hearings, which is taking place as we speak in Washington. And I think, Tracy, as we have nearly every recent show, it seems like we ought to talk about the COVID-19 pandemic, because as predicted, things are not getting better.
Yeah, not at all.
No.
In fact,
the Oregonian this morning is reporting that Multnomah County is reinstating its recommendation that both vaccinated and unvaccinated people wear masks inside to slow the transmission of COVID-19, particularly of the new virulent and highly transmissible Delta variant. Because coronavirus hospitalizations in Oregon have climbed 40% in the last week, and overall new cases have climbed by 53%. This is a few weeks after, I think, the perception was widely held around these parts that essentially we were on our way out of the pandemic, that enough of us were vaccinated and were getting vaccinated, that we were approaching herd immunity, we can start getting back to something resembling the lives we had before all of this transpired. Now, here we are, marching bravely backward. And as we've mentioned many times on this show, and it bears repeating, it's because of the bad behavior of a few that are unwilling to take the basic step of vaccinating themselves against contracting and spreading this disease. Now, here we are, heading back into another period of mass mandates. And I use the term mandate advisedly, and we're going to get into that here in a few minutes. But Tracy, this is like, here we go again.
I mean, I think we need to do it now. I'm of the mind that, yes, these are personal choices. I made my personal choice early on to get vaccinated, to have my family vaccinated, because I care about my own personal safety and the safety of my community. There, of course, has been widespread misinformation, disinformation, politicization of a horrible, terrible illness, right? And so I think, you know, the people who are at this point deciding not to be vaccinated are likely not going to be moved from that position. So wear a mask. That's all I ask. I told you I was at the coast this weekend. You know, took the kids to the arcade play place and had them wear masks to do that, and walked inside of there and not another person had on masks.
Yeah.
My kids, and you know, they were fine with it. They were not looking around. They were like, oh, I'm good, I'm fine. So I'm sure everyone else was looking at them like they were a little kooky. But no, I just feel like, yeah, we're definitely moving in the wrong direction. You know, it'll be warm for the next few months, but once we get to October, people are going to go back inside. They're going to be breathing on each other. They're going to be spreading the common cold along with COVID-19. And at this point, you know, Oregon is dealing with the Gamma variant. The Delta variant hasn't even really hit here, but it's going to. And so I just want to, as much as possible, implore people to get your vaccines and continue wearing masks inside. It just, we're just going to see this continue to play out. I think what's really been interesting in this last week, since our last show, we've seen a few high-profile Republican figures come out in support of vaccines and masks and controlling COVID-19. Whereas, you know, prior to last week, I felt like they were working for the virus, like they were on the virus's payroll. And, you know, Fox News has had a little bit of an about face, not complete about face. But I do wonder what memo went out. Was it the same memo about critical race theory? Was it a similar memo? Because the talking points all sound similar. And what it sounds like is they are beginning to say that they are supportive of, you know, mask mandates and vaccines and getting people vaccinated, and that they're getting vaccinated. I'll name Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Mitch McConnell as two of those high-profile individuals. And at the same time, they are blaming Joe Biden, milquetoasty Joe Biden, for politicizing the vaccines, and that's why people won't get them. What? Once again, right, living in two different realities, and I considerably want us to think about, like, how are we going to change that narrative? I mean, I'm not here to push up Joe Biden at any cost, but I am here to make sure that, you know, the control does not go back into the GOP hands. So we're not going to forget that Tucker Carlson has been on TV every night. Laura Ingraham has been on TV every night asking dumb questions about the vaccine. What's in it? Is the vaccine worse than the virus? And stupid questions like that. No, let's not forget. Let's not forget that we had complete, you know, I can't even say it on the air. Sorry, FCC. But we had complete, you know, oh my gosh, I can't even say the word. You know, people like Ron DeSantis are like, liberate Florida, right? And now everybody in Florida is sick. The idea that some of these folks in power have completely undermined any opportunity for us as a country to protect ourselves from the virus, and now they're changing tune because they recognize their economies are going to be hit hard, more people are going to die, which they've already sacrificed a few 600,000. You know, supporting Donald Trump and his lack of any kind of structure for getting the vaccines out, doing anything. He didn't even tell his constituents that he was vaccinated. And here we are, and now it's Joe Biden's fault.
I have to confess, I'm having a really fun time in my brain right now, substituting various words for whatever word it was you could not bring yourself to say just now on the air. That's a fun exercise. I recommend it. There's a fascinating article appeared late last week in the LA Times, headlined "Vaccine Stragglers Explain Hesitancy." And it was reported on the scene from an outreach vaccine clinic in LA County that was attempting to reach people who had not yet been vaccinated. It's a fascinating read. Most of the people who showed up at the clinic were of Latino descent, and the reporter spent some time talking with various people about why they hadn't yet gotten the vaccine. And the article on the whole suggests that there, at least some of the unvaccinated can be persuaded. Some of the reasons that people were giving were, I'm undocumented, I was afraid to come and get one, or I got COVID a few months back and I feel like I'm immune, and I just recently learned that that might not be the case, and variations on that theme. There also, this reporter found, a number of people showed up at the clinic to get vaccinated who were from places like Guatemala and Honduras, El Salvador and Mexico, who were incredibly grateful to be able to get a vaccine here in the United States that is so hard for them to get in their home countries. And to those of you who may be inclined to bluster at the fact that taxpayer money, actually it's borrowed money at this point, not yet taxpayer money, is being used to vaccinate people from other countries, I say, well, you know, I know where you can stick that sentiment. I have absolutely no qualms about vaccinating anybody who steps up to get the jab, because this is a global pandemic, and one person's health and transmissibility or lack thereof in another country affects your health and the possibility that you're going to contract the COVID-19 here in your country. This is a global health problem, and it requires a global solution. So anybody who happens to be here from another country, and one of the many Native Americans, I'm sorry, wrong term, Native-born Americans who was too stupid to get the vaccine, makes room for you to get one, I say step right up and get one.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to call people stupid for not getting a vaccine.
We'll go there.
Similar to the construct of, you know, people who, you know, stormed the Capitol, got arrested, versus people who were at the top of the food chain and directing people to do that. I mean, I feel like, and I wish this could be true, that family members of the COVID dead who had got their information from Fox News that they should not be vaccinated, that, you know, COVID-19 was like the common cold or the flu, all of that disinformation impacted their ability to, like, make a good choice, right? Because it's the news, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you're called news, and I am a not-so-information-literate person, I might just believe everything that you say. And it's obviously true that people do believe Fox News. And so, I mean, I think the COVID dead and their families, not them, but their families, should file a class action lawsuit against Fox News for that misinformation, disinformation that led to their loved one's demise. Because there's no way that any other organization would be able to still be on air spewing all of that misinformation that killed so many people. It's damaging, it's terrible, and there should be some kind of repercussion.
All right, I won't call them stupid. But I will note this. There's not a lot of data out there right now on why people are hesitant to be vaccinated, which is why one of the reasons I found this this article in the LA Times so fascinating. There's not a lot of data out there on why people are hesitating, and there's also not a lot of data on why people may have changed their stance and gone ahead and gotten the vaccine. But I can say that the statistics I've been able to find over the past several weeks indicate virtually no change amongst white conservatives who are vaccine hesitant. They have absolutely made their choice. They're not going to do anything different, and they don't seem to care. And right now, the map of COVID outbreaks, the map of vaccination rates, looks a lot like the recent electoral map, which looks a lot like the map of the free enslaved states before the Civil War. You see what I'm getting at here? We have the same sort of entrenched resistance to fact, to science, to reason, to right action amongst the same old suspects that we've always seemed to have variations of this problem from. I'm looking at you, conservative white dudes, mostly. I'm looking at you. It's really frustrating. Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida, right now as we speak, is raising money on his campaign website selling anti-vax merchandise. Try to get your head around that one, if you can.
I think I saw that of the unvaccinated leaning GOP or GOP people, it was something like 51% believe that there are 5G tracking chips in the vaccine. And this was reported from YouGov just a few weeks ago. I mean, it's just that they're getting that from somewhere. It's not like it's just coming out of nowhere. There are people who are literally using their platforms, large platforms, to grift money to sell those anti-vax, merchandise, and actually harming people, actively harming people. And it's just, wow, like, how do we all figure this out? Because it's not sustainable. If you don't understand how viruses work, they continue to mutate. So if you leave yourself susceptible, even if you don't die, you are allowing that mechanism of a virus and its, you know, natural mutation to create something even more dangerous for the rest of us. That's the choice that you're making. And so I don't want to call people bad names, but I do want to say you're making a choice to keep us all very unsafe. And meanwhile, 200 people are in quarantine from the monkeypox. I just want us to think about the fact that it's not just COVID-19. It could be the next virus and the next one, because the world is angry at us. The earth is angry at us and is coming up with ways to harm us because we continue to harm it.
That's what you got? Yes. Is that the monkeypox? After all the horrible stuff we've been talking today, you're going to leave us with the monkeypox?
The CDC is monitoring over 200 people for potential monkeypox exposure. I mean, that's from The Guardian, so read about it today. But, whoa. We're coming to the end of our time.
Yes.
And I just want to say thanks to our callers for chiming in. But also, if you have not got vaccinated, it's super easy to do so. Please do take care of yourselves. If you're not going to get vaccinated, wear a mask. It's not that hard. It really isn't. Take care of yourself and others.
Yes, indeed. And tune in to the January 6th commission hearings. I know many of you are ambivalent on the question of a commission to investigate this event, and I am among you. I am ambivalent about it, too. But I, after hearing what I heard this morning, it has value, and I think it's something that as progressives, we ought to be paying attention to. Actually, as Americans, we ought to be paying attention to. So, yes, I want to thank everybody who called to take part in the conversation today. And, yeah, get your shot if you haven't gotten it. Also, you know, wear your mask indoors because it's not as safe out there as you might think it is. It's also good, you know, to show some solidarity with folks who can't yet get vaccinated, like your children, perhaps. So be safe. Be well, and we'll be back at you next week. Thanks.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a volunteer coordinator. Our volunteer coordinator is responsible for maintaining KBOO's volunteer management systems, day-to-day coordination of volunteers, and the onboarding of new